Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast 42 for May 24, 2010. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Inger.
And it's the ranting and raving Mike Calvo.
Happy to see you again.
Actually, I got to run in a couple minutes, but I really wanted to get some griping and complaining about Google out of the way.
Google has been in the news quite a bit of late. First, I want to talk about an editorial that was posted on Saturday, feeling that Google slapped us in the face. You know, Friday they did the 30th anniversary celebration of the Pac-Man game. And they were...
Oh, sorry. Waka, waka, waka. Waka.
Upset in part, there's these sounds that are very distracting, and then maybe also that we can't play the game. But, you know, sounds has been an issue going back 12 years. All the websites used to load the MIDI files, and at least then you had the ability to hit the escape key and stop all that noise and go about your business. But to me, this signals a bigger trend, and that being the pushing of multimedia audio and video ads up in our face, going beyond the basic banner ad.
In Google's defense there, I mean, it was the first time in how many years that Google ever does something like that. They screwed it up. They fixed it eventually, and it was over with. I think that what was really going on was the community was really reacting to other stuff ticked off at Google about, and this just kind of was like the final straw that broke the camel's back. But when you look at it overall, I mean, Google has committed much worse sins than this in the big picture, but it was annoying.
Well, I mean, it's raised some points with some folks about just their overall progress in terms of accessibility. Yeah, we have Gmail, but yet then you have Docs.
Their omnipotent force in accessibility decided that blind people are allowed to have Gmail along with everybody else now?
After a good little while, yeah, but for Docs, I have a lot of sighted friends who are really into this ability to edit their stuff, then bring it up on their phone and have it there to be added to and so on. And it's so easy. And I'm sitting there going, I can't do any of this. I can read the doc. I can edit the doc, but I can't create a new one. And, you know, I can't read the current one on my phone. And just the sheer lack of accessibility is really annoying me. And it's not like Google Docs has just come out within the last 3 months or so. They've had a little while to get their act together, right?
Their accessibility guru over there thinks that they're God's gift to blind people as far as knowing what's going on, because I have yet to see any kind of survey, any kind of open communication. When one writes to this individual answers back in very curt one-line sentences. Got the PR savvy of a rattlesnake. In fact, Google has just added a very nice gentleman over there to start taking PR-type emails from very concerned and frustrated blind people. But quite candidly, being that he works for this other individual I was talking about, I really wonder how much his wings are going to be clipped by that. Meanwhile, you know, Google is growing in market share as far as cell phones. They just announced a platform for television set-top boxes. Are we allowed to have accessible TV there, Google accessibility team? Are we worthy of it? Do blind people watch television, in your opinion? You know, and this is the thing that really pisses me off, I mean, quite honestly, and you guys don't really hear me get that adamant about stuff. And we've tried in a number of times from a corporate perspective to deal with Google, and we've gotten some places where the limited scope of access that we've had with a couple of people, and those people are willing to work, we've gotten it. Other places we've just been told, for example, in Android, we've just been told, you know, you'll get what you get when you get it, and that's the end of that. And we've offered to enhance the browser, which is, by the way, open source. Hello. We've offered to enhance the browser. We've offered to, at our expense, enhance whatever needs enhancing so that we can bring SAMNet and Serotech products to the Android desktop. And we've just been told, we'll do it when we're ready. And understand that this is open source. Open source means everybody should contribute. And if you're not going to let anybody else contribute, then at least do it right and give everybody equal access.
Would you say their accessibility is in pockets, just as, say, Microsoft?
A lot of people are trying to compare Microsoft and Google, and that's just not fair because Microsoft was here while a lot of this stuff was being developed, Michael. Microsoft really set forth a lot of the standards, MSAA and other things. Obviously, Monday morning quarterbacking, we can all say, wow, MSAA really sucked and it didn't work this well and it had holes in it. But you know what? It still got blind people to work. It did its job at the time. And it gave people a platform to build on. This is years and years old. The AT industry, as I've screamed and yelled about before, really isn't that necessary if people would read the freaking documentation and apply it to their code development. You know, it's that simple. The roadmap for accessibility has been marked out. What they're doing here, even on the Linux platform, I mean, we've got the Orca project that really has provided a great level of accessibility to Ubuntu. There are many different platforms that have accessibility. We're not in the same era as it was when Microsoft was out there. So no, I would adamantly disagree. Now, I do believe that Microsoft is dropping the ball on Windows Phone 7. They've openly admitted there will be no accessibility on version 1.0 out of the box for that. So, you know, if you're getting a Windows Phone 7, don't even bother if you're blind. They don't want your money. And people, you know what? It's time for us to get up and start letting our consumer voices be heard. It's not all about lawsuits and this and that, and I'm sure lawsuits have their place. But it's time for us to start saying, you know what? We're not going to buy X phones anymore. And we're going to make a hell of a lot of noise saying we're not going to. And we do matter. We are a lot of people. And listen, if you're sitting around at home because you're part of the 80% unemployed blind people, then you've got doubly, triply the time to agitate for change.
Okay, so the question is, then, where should that be directed?
I think the
contact you have is sends one-line answers and basically blowing off people.
Not the person I have. The person that heads up accessibility for Google for the blind is accustomed to doing that and has done that to everyone. Now they've got a new gentleman. A guy named Jonas Klink, who is just an awesome person. Jonas is a geek. He knows his geekiness. He's a great PR representation for Google. He's a very warm and friendly person. He just works for the other guy. So he may speak a good line, but at the end of the day, he's going to be limited to whatever the other guy thinks we deserve or we're going to get. And I don't know what dictates that at Google. We've never been privy to that information.
Let's say I have a problem with Serotech. And I email support, and I'm not happy with the results. And I do a little research, and I find out, well, who's the top dog over there? What's that, Mr. Mike Calvo? Why could not the same action be taken in Google?
You can't get past the head of their accessibility team. Nobody knows who his boss is. I don't know this person as a person. I have nothing against that person as an individual. The only thing I can say is that in emails, in postings, they come off arrogant, condescending, patronizing, you know, and that's just the beginning of the words that I can use on air that I've heard to describe this person.
Well, hopefully people have kept those emails. I still have to believe you go to, you know, Sergey Brin or Eric Schmidt or someone and say, hey, this cat's not doing his job.
And let me tell you, I would invite anyone from Google to come onto this podcast or in any other public forum and refute anything that I or anybody else on this podcast is saying, because I think we've got a lot of backup for it. Now, I understand that there's also some problems with Android getting out onto multiple devices. You know, you've got the whole fragmentation thing going on, and you've got companies like I myself have been yelling and screaming at Motorola to finally upgrade my Click to version 2.1, and now they're at 2.2 for Android that's coming out shortly, and Motorola has yet to do it. So that's not Google's fault.
That's just one piece of the puzzle. If you look at something as relatively simple as Google Docs, it's not like they don't understand what needs to be done. They have sort of implemented ARIA in a very strange and non-standard way, and it's kind of been left half done. In fact, I think the links to the ARIA-enabled Google tools are not displaying ARIA-enabled stuff now. So there's something where they clearly know what needs to be done and have chosen, for whatever reason, at least from what I can see, not to proceed with that.
Ricky, as the head of an AT company, the thing that bothers me the most about investing and doing anything with this wonderful company is the fact that I don't think they take us seriously. I don't see their dedication. I don't see their heartfelt resolve to making, you know, the world an accessible place. Therefore, I don't feel comfortable investing my consumer's dollar into doing anything to facilitate, were there even to be facilitation for their products. I don't feel that we're taken seriously. I think that they throw us a bone from time to time.
scary, but what if their take is, well, we're not worried about the screen reader industry, we will be the industry.
That, well, then if they're going to be the industry, then they need to serve. If you've chosen the role of God, then you better be able to be omnipotent and do everything that you can do worldwide. If not, then you need some help. You know, and this community is more than willing to step up in a very positive manner. I think that the degree of griping and complaining in this community has gone down since the advent of Twitter and Facebook, where companies can actually hear directly from blind consumers and respond. And I've seen it happen with companies on Twitter and Facebook. I think that the griping has gone down and the responsiveness from companies to our needs has gone up. Google, on the other hand, just seems to kind of hide back there and throw out these vague platforms like the new set-top box platform. I didn't see anything about accessibility. Fine, if they don't want to put it in the presentation, at least, for heaven's sakes, put it in the documentation about it somewhere, you know, so we know what we're getting ready for. I want to buy a set-top box for my family, but I want to be able to use it too. I just bought accessible products recently for my family, and I'm able to use them just like they are.
Oh, but they would argue they're working on very important things, like they launched secure search, HTTPS search. So if you're in a public cafe, no one has to know what you're searching for. And the big free WebM codec for video. So there's some alternatives to Adobe.
Well, the WebM codec is not going to see the light of day for years anyway. I mean, if they ever get it out, companies, including Apple, that have already committed to suing the hell out of them so that they don't get that product out the door, that there's certain patent infringement there, which the whole patent infringement thing and what's going on with patents and the PTO and all of that is just criminal to begin with. But don't get me started on that. That's a whole different podcast and argument there.
Well, plus there was some technical oversights that, from my understanding, is going to keep it from working anyway. On a more positive note, in terms of accessibility, you have... You've made some interesting findings with the iPad you wanted to share with us.
I think, along with the rest of the world, that Steve Jobs is one arrogant dude. And I think that
one rich, arrogant dude.
Touche. And that arrogance trickles down into the organization at many levels. In much disagreement with some of his views about censorship on the iTunes store, on the App Store, and things of that nature, as I am. The dude has something when he created this iPad. We bought one for Serotech because we're working on iBlink, we're working on SAMNET port for iPhone, and my wife saw it, and my kids saw it. And for the first 24 hours, I didn't see it. They just took it. What it ended up doing is forcing me to go out and buy another one. And now we have two iPads at the house, and that's still not enough. These guys don't put the darn thing down between Netflix and ABC and Facebook. And it's an amazing thing to watch. And these kids, they take it with them in the car. The 3G is amazing. AT&T is actually working here in Orlando. I don't know how that goes for the rest of the country. And I would imagine if AT&T is staying true to form, it varies by market, as they so clearly say in their small print. The experience we've had with the iPad is nothing short of amazing. As I said before, it's accessible. For the most part, they've got a couple of little wrinkles here and there in the browser and whatnot, and in things like the ABC app and things where buttons don't click right or whatever. But for the most part, it rocks, and I don't see that it's an extra thing that people don't need. I think that it provides a level of access to content that no other product in their product offering does. I mean, sure, it offers some of the same things, like I can get podcasts on all my iProducts. I can get pictures on all my iProducts, video, but can you get them in such a great looking, easy to use because of space? There are times where the big screen is awesome, and then there are times where you say, man, I wish I could use it on a little screen. Wait, I can! You know, and that's where the iPhone or the iPod Touch comes in handy. So I really think he got something there. And I think for us as blind consumers, as the market continues to buy these things, as we as blind people start to realize, wow, we can use these things right next to our sighted counterparts. And companies like Serotech come alongside and develop tools that will allow blind folks to be just as productive right alongside of the sighted ones. They can use sighted folks tools or blind folks tools, whichever one you want. And there is a difference. Our software is built with the blind person in mind from the ground up. And unfortunately, accessibility is still bolted on for the most part by most companies when they write software. But in this particular case, this product really, really is awesome. It really provides a great experience where I can sit down with my girls and watch a video with them. My son bought Lord of the Rings and we were reading it together. He had voiceover going and we were listening to the iBook of the Lord of the Rings. that's a great thing for me to be able to share with my kids and to be able to share with my wife when we watch a movie together or whatever. I really like the device. I know there are people who don't. But again, as blind people start to use it more and more, I think we're going to see a lot more of these blind ghetto note takers disappearing and people saying, you know, I'm going to carry an eye product. Just going back for a second to our Google rant, that doesn't stop there. If Android did as good a job as Apple's done, I think that a lot of people would be looking at those products too. And by the way, Microsoft, now you're dropping the ball and you're not doing accessibility anymore. What's the deal? You know, are we all going to become Appleites now? Heaven forbid.
So what do you say to the people who complain that this touchscreen is too large, giving too much real estate, making it hard to find things?
It's the Goldilocks
syndrome. I mean, that's like dropping something on the floor. You grope, you don't find it, you grope in a little larger pattern, right?
It's totally the Goldilocks syndrome. Well, this screen is too big. Well, this screen is too small. This screen fits me just right. Cool thing is that we've got different screens to choose from. So it may not be for you. Somebody brought up in a meeting the other day, well, what if somebody only buys a Serotek screen reader and doesn't buy Samnet? So they bought something. You know, what if they buy Samnet and they don't buy the screen reader? So they bought something. What if they go and they only use SA2Go? It doesn't matter. The point is there's a plethora of choices to choose from. It's not like the old Model Ts where you can have any color you want as long as it's black.
Well, exactly. It's all about options and the fact that all of these options in terms of Apple there are accessible, excluding the Apple TV.
I heard that they have actually made a commitment to making the Apple TV accessible. And if they do, guys, you rock, regardless of how arrogant you guys are.
Oh, but arrogance is confidence, don't you know?
Yeah, well, you betcha.
Oh, sure.
Oh, don't get us started, you know. We'll start like talking like we're from Fargo.
Don't you know?
That's my rant. I'm going to have to get out of here, Michael.
Well, thanks for joining us for a little while.
Thanks
anyway.
For ranting. We always enjoy your rants.
Thanks, guys.
Moving on in the podcast.
Yes, social networking sites are passing data to agencies. The article concerns me for a couple of reasons, because now that it's brought to the light of day, these agencies are saying, well, but we didn't know this data was included, so we didn't use it. Not buying it.
What?
Not buying it.
Right.
Wait a minute. You're saying Facebook and MySpace are sending me key user info, ages and locations, and data that we can use for advertising purposes. But now you're going to say, well, we didn't do anything with it because we didn't know it was there.
Yeah, we didn't know. We never look at that stuff. Come on.
I mean, come on. Be upfront about it. And, you know, I was originally, like Mike, on Facebook thinking, well, big deal. You know it. There's privacy options. You go in and set them. But since then, Ricky, I've done some more investigation when I read the article that 60% of Facebook users are considering closing their accounts. So I said, well, why is it? What's the deal? And let me ask you and our listeners, have any of you tried to go to your privacy settings? And if so, did you realize there's as many as 50 pages totaling 170 different options to be set?
That's shocking. And I have not done it simply because I gave up the idea of there being private info on Facebook when I signed up, even though at the time they were very much saying we're the most secure social network on the planet. I thought long and hard about joining Facebook and ultimately ended up deciding to do that and basically just accepted that if I was sharing this info, it was probably going to come out at some point. There are so many people that I know. So the 60% of people closing their Facebook accounts is not just sort of, you know, everybody knows that 60% of statistics are made up. That really appears to be reflected in my life and the people that I know. I've seen a great number of people drop off Facebook within the last couple of weeks. We're not done with the Facebook privacy issues by any means.
And I suspect that is why Facebook has alleged, and I believe because of the drop-off, that they have alleged that they will simplify the settings. So whether that comes from some mandate from the FTC, or I think numbers speak louder than words. So right, if people are closing or deleting their accounts, then that speaks to the need to have this issue addressed from within the company. But interesting enough, there's a website called reclaimprivacy.org. You go to the site, there's a link there that says add your favorites, and then you log into Facebook and go into your privacy settings and then open this favorite, and then it consolidates all of the privacy settings into one place so that you can adjust all of them.
So
I'm going to test that for accessibility, but I think it's a very interesting concept.
That is a very interesting concept. You could do this then across various social networks, so you could add MySpace.
Well, this is just for Facebook. But also you have zero.facebook.com, which is a mobile site for data, and there will be no fees for it, but don't look for it in in a developing country near you, because this is going to be more for the third world country. So U.S., China, U.K., Germany, folks that are prosperous will not be getting this service. So I guess that's a good thing. I mean, that's akin to our SA2Go, its intention being for less developed countries where internet access and poverty are greater issues than they are, you know, in the States. In the short news, it doesn't take too long to mention, we have the release already of Qwitter 4.01. Started with 4.0. Anytime you see a 0.0 on a version, you know there's probably an issue or two, but they've already released 4.01 to fix a few issues. So if you have already got 4.0, you might want to go back again to Qwitter-client.net and get 4.01. Or if you've been using the betas, or if you're using 3.1, might be time to go ahead and upgrade. A lot of cool new features.
Go read the documentation. It's very well written, very self-explanatory as far as how to use each type of session, be it a Twitter session or the Solona.net CAPTCHA solution. Go check it out for yourself, Qwitter-client.net.
My hands just won't keep still.
Now, I did something the other day. I woke up Saturday morning at 3 a.m., couldn't sleep, and for some unknown, unexplained reason I will never understand, I made my first sound pack.
You have no idea how it feels.
Just never know what kind of thing is going to pop into your head at 3 in the morning, do you?
Oh, baby. Yeah, because it was a Barry White sound pack.
Oh, yeah.
You got it together.
I'm thinking about one for the Sarah Talk outtakes. Give it some sex appeal with the Barry White sound pack. You can get the link at serotalk.com. Verizon did it. The FCC whined about it, but apparently did nothing. So now AT&T, after June 1st, is going to raise its early termination fee on many devices to $325.
Oh, yes. We love it.
Is there any truth to the rumor that there's going to be an iPhone on Verizon? Now, I could see them raising this kind of thing for the iPhone specifically if they got the idea that people could go elsewhere to get better service. Then they say, well, I'm going to figure out a way to get my money one way or another. Typical AT&T tactics of getting as much money from its customers as possible.
Well, Steve Jobs will be doing the keynote opening at WWDC out in San Francisco on June 7th. So our podcast probably will launch a little bit later that day so that we can bring you any news announced at that event. But certainly it is hoped that there will be some specific announcements about the forthcoming iPhone software and or the hardware, maybe some iPad updates, and who knows what else. 2 weeks from today, we'll have that information for you. The Visions Career and Tech and Employment Institute takes place August 5th through the 11th in Spring Valley, New York. I've heard really good things about the event. If you can't attend the whole week, you can attend just for the weekend at an even more affordable price. Kind of like a tech geek camp. Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it does sound very cool. And one of the things that they do, you know, from having been an exhibitor, as do I, that there are times when the exhibit hall ends up being one large zoo and it's difficult to really show anything to people and you're kind of yelling to hear over each other. But what Visions tends to do is on the days of the exhibit halls, they let a certain number of people in and then follow that up with more people. You get smaller groups that you can really speak to effectively.
But speaking of booth space and all that good stuff, CSUN 2011, the dates have been announced, and they're actually earlier, 1 week earlier, March 14th through the 19th, same place as this year in San Diego. But I guess the booth fees or the percentage of the booth fees will be going up 5% each year over the next 3 years as they say they are coming in line with other conventions in the way that they handle the reservation of booth spaces.
It's unfortunate to see the costs go up. But I am pleased that it's going to be in San Diego again. It's a beautiful city and begins on my birthday, it so happens. And so I'll be spending some time in lovely San Diego.
Pisces, huh?
Yes.
Cool.
On Pi Day.
Pi Day.
3.14.
This is an interesting article I'm posting. I say it hits the mark right on. It's 10 phrases that you should ban from your resume. Now, I used to look through resumes both when I worked in radio and at the Better Business Bureau, and I'm sure you're involved in that when people applying for work at Serotech. So I'm curious if you would agree with these.
Most of them I really cringe about. The communication skills, and I have seen lots of resumes before I worked for Serotech. I worked for an agency who did job placement, so I have definitely seen my share of resumes. And with the communication skills phrase in particular, I would often see that in a resume with a lot of misspellings. I agree with probably 7 out of 10.
Say which ones you would keep. Team player.
No.
Communication skills.
Absolutely not.
Proven track record.
No.
Problem solver.
That's a maybe, but probably not.
Assisted with.
That one I would keep because a lot of times it ends up being pretty accurate. And you want to say that you've had experience, but you didn't do it all yourself.
Right. And their take was assisted with, meaning you didn't exercise any leadership in it, so it doesn't help you. But yeah, I agree if it's a fair assessment. I think that's the key with all these. But the rest of them are strong work ethic.
No.
Bottom line?
Absolutely not.
Responsible for?
That one I would leave. It's hard to say that you did something and show that you were the lead on it without using that particular phrase.
Self-motivated?
No.
And work in a fast-paced environment?
No. And let me tell you the reason that I don't like a lot of these. For something like the bottom line, conscious of the bottom line or whatever, and communication skills and fast-paced environment, it really smacks of trying to tell the person what they want to hear, and it's almost semantically null. You know, it says nothing. It's trying to up the relevant keyword count, and I just don't think it works.
What this is saying is don't use the words, but document actions that communicate those words.
It makes sense, because if you do have a great work ethic, then you want to say something about that. If you are conscious of the bottom line, then you need to point that out in some way. For example, wrote a program which saved the corporation $500,000 or whatever it is.
Or create a campaign to counter below normal sales or something. Exactly. Avoid those. Or if you're going to put a statement in like that, you better back it up. I was bothered by other things like knowledge of Microsoft Office. What a fluke.
So you can type a document. Aren't you awesome?
I've heard of it.
I know of it.
Yeah, I know of it. You put them down in front of a computer and your mileage varies greatly on that one. An interesting book called Feed Your Pet Right, The Authoritative Guide to Feeding Dogs and Cats. You need to read the ingredients because there's misinformation, or even pet food companies aren't really doing much research, despite maybe claims they have in their advertisements, about the health of their products. And I bring this up only because, obviously, there's the don't feed your dog onions or garlic or chocolate or macadamia nuts. But I'm curious what you were taught in the guide dog schools about choosing the quality of food for your pet.
At my guide dog school, they were feeding the dogs Iams, and the dogs would end up having very loose stools, some of them, and just some really awkward stuff. And they'd say, you know, you can switch when you get home and go for Purina One or something like that. And really, the things that they recommended were for people trying to maintain a budget. But I found that after having used Purina One for a while, and my dog got frequent ear infections, and he gained weight despite being very active, and finally decided to research the ingredients and discovered that there was a lot of corn filler, which many dogs are allergic to, and there was not a whole lot of nutrients. We were never taught to look at how much protein and how much fat your dog should be getting and what you should be looking for on the label. So I ended up doing that research myself. And I think a lot of guide dog schools are similar to mine in that respect. You'd be shocked when you start looking at the ingredients of these very popular brands of food and discover, wow, you're basically feeding your dog McDonald's every day.
Of course, you only attended one, so it'd be hard. We'd like to hear your email on that, resources@serotalk.com, to see how much of your training discussed specifically choosing good dog food for your pet, or what signs and symptoms to look for to suggest that you need to change your existing food. Is that something taught in class, or is that done on a one-by-one basis? I would be curious to hear from people on that. resources@serotalk.com.
Yeah, me too.
Well, Skype, the latest is 4.2.0.169 for those who like to stay up on that, but they've also come out with the Skype 5 beta. That's right, so those of you using 3.8, someday you're going to have to upgrade because they're already...
That's
up
right.
To a beta of Skype 5, which includes five-way video calls. That's right. You and four other people can now have video calls, where in the past it's been limited to one-on-one. I'm told there is no accessibility features built into Skype. However, we have a Samnet member who is using the beta of Skype 5, and this is someone I thought would be least likely to embark on such a project, and he's using it in conjunction with Skype Talking. Now, understand, if you use beta software, you're on your own. Don't call for tech support, because it is what it is. I haven't been brave enough to go there yet. Of course, I use it too much in these tech chats and podcasts to always be on the cutting edge there. As I told you, I bought a 15-inch MacBook Pro and have been one of many to find out that actually the battery life, quite honestly, sucks. It has two different graphics cards, and it's supposed to switch as needed when you need more intensive graphics. But certain things, like especially VMware Fusion, which is a program we use to run Windows, it tends to gobble up battery life, and it cuts it down to like 5 hours when we're supposed to be getting between 8 and 9. Also, the Transmit FTP client that some folks use and some other apps that I do not use in particular. But I am told there is a fix on the way. And of course, the way Apple does it, you get this update, like a firmware update, and then you hold the power button in, I guess, for a certain period of time, and it updates the firmware, which is really cool. A lot easier than doing it on the Windows side. So I've never done it before. We'll see how that works.
I'm just curious, what made you as a totally blind person decide to get the MacBook with the larger screen?
I got the Core i7 processor. It also has a audio input, 7200 RPM drive. Yeah, a lot of money other than a tax write-off. There's times I have guilt over it, thinking I could have just bought the 13-inch. It would have met my needs. But I wanted a good laptop to last me years into the future. And I think this device will. It runs great. And of course, I could do Windows and Mac and do all my audio stuff and even play around with video. And I've been enjoying the unit. But that's why I got a 15. Of course, that's part of Apple and their marketing. You know, nothing comes for free.
Absolutely.
Everything's layered. You want this one thing or these one or two things, but you have to spend a little bit more to get it.
Yep.
Apparently it worked on me. I fell right in line in Suckerville. I don't know.
Gulp that Apple Kool-Aid.
That's right. Next gen gigabit wireless specification has been released, 1.0 version of it. And it's interesting because it's going to allow speeds up to 7 Gbps. That's 7 gigabits per second. First off, the frequency is 60 gigahertz, and I don't know how many of you know about radio, but that's pretty high in the frequency range, which means your ability to communicate any distance is going to be pretty short in range. But they've got some technology they claim called beamforming that will use multiple transmitters and will actually go beyond the 10 yards or 30 feet that current technologies allow. But they claim it'll be backward compatible with BG and N technology, so it'll still work with a 2.4 or 5.8 system as well. But it has some big names that have signed on to it. Not that that's always meant a success in the past, but Cisco and Atheros and Broadcom and Intel and AMD and Dell, as well as some cell companies and electronics manufacturers. So in the next couple of years, we might really be grooving with 7 gigabits per second. I mean, it's great for in your home when you're doing wireless data or watching video, transferring video from one device to another or something like that.
But faster is always better, right? Always.
Coming up in the podcast, I'm going to step into my kitchen and demo, of all things, a roaster oven / crock pot.
Nice.
This thing does it all. It's the Rival model RO180. Very cool device, Ricky. And my reason for doing this is, in an earlier tech chat, I realized how many blind people are afraid to cook. I really was not aware of that.
It's kind of amazing how many people are a little frightened. I'm hoping that showing something like this, you know, a crock pot / roaster oven, has so many possibilities that are really safe and generally pretty easy to do. Hoping people will rush out and buy either something like this or something similar just to discover the fact that cooking doesn't have to fill you with terror.
Well, there's so many, you know, there's an NLS book, great recipes with 3 ingredients or less. I know Dale Campbell's selling them. I think even National Braille Press has a book like that. Bookshare, I'm sure. Of course, recipes on Samnet. So there's so many options. There's no need to be eating these overpriced and undernourished, you know, frozen foods out there.
You got it.
Just want to let some of you folks know, of course, we lost the archive to Tech Chat 59. So basically, I recreated it, so to speak. I did a review of 3 radios. 2 of them are HD and 1 is a portable, so you can go listen to that in the archives, either under the Information Center or Entertainment Guide / podcasts on Samnet or through the Samnet Buzz on your iPhone, or, as always, by going to serotalk.com. That's all I've got.
I'll get out of here, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Join us for Podcast 43 on June 7. We will give you as much news as available about announcements from Apple and, of course, any other late breaking news as well.
Hi, this is Michael Law, and we stepped into my kitchen today to do a review of a product I think is going to make life much easier for many of you listening to this program. It has for me. It was given to me as a Christmas gift. It is the Rival, that's the brand name Rival, R-I-V-A-L, roaster oven model RO180. This unit not only roasts, but it also bakes and cooks and has a nice removable steel serving dish. And I'm talking deep. We're talking a lot of food storage here. This unit can cook turkeys and roasts up to 18 pounds in weight. Has an adjustable thermostat from 150 to 450 degrees. And best of all, folks, it's blind friendly. That's right. It's a rotary dial with a nice little pointer that when pointing straight up is what we call 12 o'clock. That would be 300 degrees. Everything I have cooked in this device has come out absolutely fantastic. Tasting great. Very tender, very moist, never burned, never dry, just an awesome tool. You're going to love this device because not only does it cook 30% faster, assuming, of course, you don't keep taking the lid off and letting the steam release, which adds to the cooking time, uses 75% less electricity than your oven. Not to mention the fact that the oven really heats up your home, as is the case now in the summertime, where it's 90 degrees outside. Your air conditioner is running harder to compensate for all of the heat that the oven has produced, where the heat in these roaster ovens is self-contained. It stays within the device. It has a removable steel roasting rack and an enamel on steel roasting pan, they call it. But what's cool, you have three little crock pots. Sounds like a little song or something. Three little crock pots that come with the device. So you could have a multitude of sides or what have you that you're cooking along with your meat, if that's what you're doing. And it has little pull-up handles that you can use to kind of grab on. The sides of the actual unit stay pretty cool of this roaster oven itself. It comes with a 1-year warranty. So the dimensions are 23 inches by 17 inches by 9 inches with a weight of 16 pounds. Main dishes, side dishes, and yes, even desserts. People have even mentioned baking pecan pies and things in it, which I have not done. But you can also, if you do an internet search, find quite a few recipes specifically for roasters. So you'll never run out of ideas. Me being a carnivore by design, chicken, pork, beef, turkey, and fish all come out very tender and very moist. The only downsides, I guess, would be it comes with a short cord, which is typical of cookware like this because they want to prevent the cord getting stuck underneath the unit and melting or shorting out or catching on fire. So they keep a very short cord. So that does limit sometimes the placement on it. And if you're going to use any kind of extension cord, you need to make sure that it is capable of handling the current that a device like this is going to draw. The cord should have a bigger diameter than what you're plugging into. Another possible downside is that the pan is very large. 18 quart is a pretty large pan, so it is too large to fit into most sinks. So you're essentially setting it across the top of the sink and adding some hot water and soap. But as long as you drain the contents out as soon as you're finished, get your meat out of there, drain the grease right away, it cleans pretty easy. I can't complain. I've never had anything that I couldn't remove. This thing uses so little liquid because it keeps the moisture of the food inside. But to also keep in mind that when raising the lid, the steam escapes, which adds to your cooking time. So it's certainly natural when you first start using it, you want to check your food a couple times and see if it's done. But as you become acquainted with the device, you'll kind of know how long things take. One caveat for our partially sighted listeners, it does have no light on it. You will hear a slight hum to indicate that the power is on. But since there is no power button per se, I would advise that you want to plug this unit in last. So in other words, you want to prepare your food in either the individual crock pots or the big steel pan. Get all of that in place, put on the lid, and then plug in the device. Likewise, when you are finished and you're sure that your food is adequately cooked, make sure that you unplug it right away. Because once it is plugged in, even if turned counterclockwise all the way to the left, you are still producing heat at 150 degrees. I also read a review of a massage therapist uses it to heat the stones that he uses in his massage work. So I suspect there are many uses that we haven't even thought of. The company is Rival, R-I-V-A-L. It is a roaster oven / crock pot and is the model RO180. The retail on it is $69. Amazon currently has it for about $44. So of course you can always shop around and find the best price. The best Christmas gift I ever received, and I really don't use my oven anymore, quite honestly. I don't need to. We're going to go ahead and prepare some food in this device, and then we'll come back in about 2 hours, and I'll show you a couple things to keep in mind. I would argue this device is a little safer, but of course, there's just always common sense that you have to use when using cookery. Even if you don't want to use it on a full-time basis, the holidays is a great time to use it because you could cook your turkey or ham in this device, leaving your oven open for other side dishes that you may prepare. And of course, if you don't want to spend that much money, there are some smaller units that you can purchase where the pans are not as deep. The height and width usually seem to be about the same, but the pans are not as deep. Maybe coming in around $25 in price without the crock pots to go across the top, but still allowing you to make casseroles and meats with pretty much the same tenderness and moisture that you can get from this unit. So with that, let's prepare some cuisine. 10 minutes later, I have made sure that my steel pan was good and clean. I have taken my two chickens and a little rack of ribs, chickens on one end, ribs on the other, seasoned them up the way I like it. Barbecue flavored sea salt. Good stuff. Did that with a little bit of cayenne pepper, bit of garlic. Should be pretty good. Sometimes what I will do is actually cook it till it's just about finished, remove the meat, drain all the grease, and then add some soups. Probably wondering why I'm cooking so much meat. I'm not going to eat all this at once, folks. I'm actually going to freeze some of it, keep the slab of ribs and the thigh leg quarters down. I will remove the breast meat, bag it up, maybe freeze it or use it later in some chicken fettuccine or some form of chicken dish. So we have the racks inserted before the meat, of course. This does elevate the meat slightly from the bottom, so all of the drippings will be below. And once we remove the contents, I will show you just how much we will not be eating, as you will hear it go down the drain. So I will take what is a pretty heavy, not because of the rack itself, but because of all of the meat that I have procured in it. I will line it up and just set it down in the roaster. And then we will grab the infamous lid here. And again, it is nicely rounded, fits on there just beautifully, just perfect. And then what I always do is make sure that my roaster has adequate space around it. The wire is not going to touch anything. Make sure I've got clearance. Make sure my temperature gauge is set at about the 3 o'clock position. Best I can tell, straight up 12 o'clock is 300, 1:30 is 350, 3 o'clock is 400, and 4:30 or cranked up all the way is 450, although some have complained it exceeds 450. I have not found that to be the case. The hum that the unit makes when it is on, very similar to a sound you would hear from a crock pot, audio confirmation that the unit is actually heating. That lets us know all is good. Last thing we want to do when beginning the meal is plug it in. And the first thing we want to do once we're sure the food is adequately cooked is to unplug it. So now let's plug in the device. And again, because it stays tender and moist, it's not like there's this absolute 5-minute window that food has to be removed. You actually have, I would say, probably at least a 1 hour, maybe 90-minute grace period between when the food is done to the point of being cooked and being safe to consume versus if you want your food items more well done. Okay, it is some 2.5 hours later, but I'm about to raise the lid. A very important caveat of this device. When you raise the lid, don't move it too suddenly, because if you do, you could conceivably get a warm steam on yourself. Raise the lid, hold the lid over the roaster so that any steam moisture will go back into the food and prevent you from burning yourself. The unit itself is very warm, and if you touched it, you could burn yourself. But I have it positioned so that the handle can be touched. So I get orientation to the handle, raise my hand up, go over to the middle of said device, and now I will raise the lid, and you will hear the sound that might make you think it's cooking faster than it is, but it's really the steam falling back into the food. Now I'll raise the lid, and as I said, I'm holding it there a few seconds, wiggling it just a little, get any excess steam. Okay, I feel good about it now. I'm going to move it over to the side and check to see if the meat, which smells absolutely fantastic, is ready for consumption. But essentially, the best trick I have found for any meat with bones, be it pork chops, chicken, or ribs, grab the bone. I'm going to use an oven glove here. And grab a bone and give it a slight turn with your hand. And if it pulls free and there's no meat on it, this is a surefire clue that your meat has been cooked to completion. So to cook safely, don't have to do this, but wise idea. You either wait for the food to cool, but obviously you want to make sure it's done. So if it is, you can go ahead and unplug the device. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a chicken bone. I'm going to give it a little twist. I'm going to pull, and voila. tender, ready to go. This food is done, my friend. So I'm going to wait a few minutes before removing it. I could certainly grab a spatula or use a fork and stab the meat and remove it and place it in some bowl or some third-party dish. But I'm definitely confident that the food is completely cooked. So if nothing else, I'm going to unplug the device so that I don't forget at any point in the future. If you don't wish to eat just yet, you could go ahead and place the lid back on the food and let it simmer in its juices and stay warm for a bit longer. I am about ready to eat though, so I'm going to walk away, leave the food for 15, 20 minutes or so until it quits sizzling, so I'm confident that it has cooled off enough that should it come in contact with my hand, that I know that I will not be burned in the process. So we will come back, I will remove the food, and let you hear the exciting and maybe for some disgusting sound of all of the unnecessary juices. It's not all fat. Some of it is moisture from this roaster as we send it down the drain and are left with quality, tender, juicy, succulent, moist meat. 10 minutes has elapsed. I have removed the chicken and ribs from the device. And now really all that's left is to grab the ends of this roaster and take it over to the sink, and let's get rid of the undesirable chicken fat. Again, as I said, this pan is a little large to fit in your sink, so there's always an issue of how do you want to approach this. First thing I will do is remove the little rack, again carefully, to make sure that I don't get touched or skewered with any fat that might still be warm. Good thing is the heat is dissipated very quickly once you remove the lid. Two other cool things are that, A, you don't need foil, and you don't need to use a glass pan. So let's get rid of the debris. Wow, that's a lot. Keep in mind, that's not all fat, that's all moisture, because the roaster is keeping the moisture from the food intact. Now, even if we don't wish to wash the unit right away, we have removed the excess. Making casseroles or something other than meat that would have grease in it, you could have grabbed this pan with the lid intact and taken it into your kitchen table for serving to your guests. With all the excess removed, I will go ahead, and of course at a slight angle because it does not fully fit in the sink. Again, while this device is easy to clean, any kitchen utensil, it's always easier on yourself to go ahead and rinse and wash as soon as possible. So what I'm going to do now is add some hot water and a little bit of dish soap so that when I'm finished enjoying my chicken and a couple of ribs, I can come back in here and get the party started with that always fun task of dishes. But again, it will be pretty easy to clean. Again, I will let it fill for a little bit. I just love this device. I just can't speak highly enough of it. I'm sure some of you listening to this are wondering, why am I even doing this? The simple answer is many blind people, are afraid to cook, and there's no need for it. There are great recipe books using 3 ingredients or less. There's books from the NLS, so you can listen to the recipes. Books sold by Dale Campbell at Blind Mice Smart. So the options are endless. I'm sure Bookshare has books if you'd rather have it in written form. You need to know how things are spelled if you're going out to buy and get ingredients. Whatever the reason, there is no reason to be afraid. You can cook quality food. That should be enough water. I assure you, my cooking skills are average at best. I would argue below average when I watch other people do their magic in the kitchen. But with that said, my food tastes good. But I have not messed up a meal yet in this device. And I just can't speak highly enough of it in terms of economics, in terms of accessibility. Sometimes less is more. Very basic device. Gets the job done. And what matters at the end of the day, it makes great tasting food. So whether you want meat, casseroles, desserts, the choices are endless. Search the internet for great roaster recipes. There are many great recipes on Samnet. But don't deny yourself great food. Don't feel like you have to live with frozen foods, TV dinners. Not only do you pay a lot for those frozen meals, the sodium content is high and the health content is low. And we need to be our best by eating quality food. I just hope this motivates some of you who are afraid to cook to go in and give it a shot. Whether you want to make chili or stew or soups, or want to have a meat frenzy as I just did, or want to make desserts in this device, or maybe some great macaroni and cheese, whatever your favorite food, give it a try. I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Ideal for online learning, classroom lectures, corporate events, or presentations. Accessible Event is the robust, scalable solution for presentations for 10 to 10,000. The service works with presentations in Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, Internet Explorer, Firefox, Adobe, and meeting programs such as WebEx, GoToMeeting, Connect, and more. Accessible Event requires no installation, and users need only an internet connection and Adobe Flash to participate. After the event, nothing is left behind on anyone's computer. Competitively priced, Accessible Event can be purchased per incident on a monthly or annual basis or on an enterprise server configuration. Reach your entire audience with Accessible Event. For more information, email accessibleevent@cerotech.com or call 866-202-0520 or 612-246-4818.
Kaito, spelled K-A-I-T-O, model K-A-1103. And again, like a lot of devices these days, we can't program everything that this radio is capable of doing. For example, it claims 255 memories. But I am excited to say that we figured out how to program at least 100 of the memories, AM and FM. It also has short wave up to 30 megahertz. And of course, in there, you can also do upper and lower sideband control in the bottom right, a little dial to adjust that. But the quality seems really well. The good thing about this radio is it has an earphone out that's adjusted with the volume control, but it also has a line out. So that is going to give us the capability to let you hear both the speaker of the radio, which is okay. It's not great, but it's not cheap either. You know, your basic 3-inch speaker. So first, let me describe the radio. 8 inches long, about 5 inches in high, maybe about 1.5 inches thick. On the top left, there are three buttons, and they do different things. That's the design of radios these days. When the radio is off, the two buttons on the left are, from left to right, alarm 1 and alarm 2. And that's important to note, because if the radio is off and you accidentally press or hit those buttons, it will turn on the alarms. If all of a sudden the radio comes on at 6:55 in the evening and you don't remember setting the alarms to do that, you hit either one of those two alarms, so you can simply press it again to disable those. These are toggles. And the third button lets you adjust your volume, as we'll show you shortly. This is an interesting radio. Programming it is very different from any radio I've seen to date. But then as we move to the bottom, there's an interesting design of buttons. There's 10 buttons that go across in a row, and you might at first glance, as I did, think, okay, these must be the preset buttons. Well, they are actually the keypad, but instead of lining it up in four rows, they literally go from left to right, 1 through 9 and 0 on the far right. Below that are 6 buttons. Right below the 1, there is the power button, and then there's a little space, and then the other 5 buttons. Of the 5 buttons, or second from the left, the first one is the lock button. And this, when pressed and held for about 3 seconds, will prevent any other button from performing a function. And these lock buttons are pretty common on almost all of the radios of today. The only button that will still work is the power button to actually turn off the unit. The second one of these 5 buttons does 2 different things. It is used for setting the clock, which we cannot do because that is menu driven. I'm not saying it can't be done, but I don't know how to do it. And my son indicated there's no ability to directly key in the frequency, so you're literally moving the dial to adjust the hour and then the minute. But it also serves as the delete button and can be used in conjunction with the middle of the top 3 buttons on the left, on the top of the radio, to actually delete presets. The third of the 5 buttons, or the middle of the 5, is the stereo mono button. So if you have a weak station, you can put it into mono. Maybe it's okay for music, but then when the news comes on, it's too much noise and you can put it into mono. And I believe you can also set that in the presets as making the channel mono. The final 2 buttons, the fourth one or second one from the right, is actually your FM buttons. So you would key in a frequency using the buttons above here, this row of 10 buttons, then pressing the FM button and jumping to that channel. Likewise, if you enter an AM or shortwave frequency, you would press the bottom right button, and that would take you to the appropriate band to listen to that station. Let's turn on the radio so you can get an idea of the sound quality, and we'll show you how to program.
Your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse.
Now, as you heard, that's not bad sound quality. Now, I've programmed 20 presets in here. So one thing I can do to go directly to a preset is I can push a number 1 through 20. And then push the very top left button and jump to that channel, number 1, 5. And it takes some getting used to since all 10 buttons are in a row, and I'll hit the top left. Of course, the speaker, and it is mono, but when I flip this, you will hear it in stereo. Pretty decent sound. I think the stereo quality of both the line out jack and the earphone jack, which can be adjusted with the volume, I think it's pretty good. And AM sounds great. So if you like listening to talk radio or just anything on AM, yes, even music stations or sportscasts, the audio is really good.
Hey, get together, sir. And the other thing is, you know, Ray LaHood is just a punching boy of...
And sign up for free breaking news alerts delivered via text or email. Then tune to Newstalk 750 WSB for live coverage.
So make the Hostess cupcake, the double sweet one with the white cream in the middle with the chocolate crunch.
Finals, the Celtics and Magic in Orlando Sunday afternoon. The sports at 15 and 45 on your home for Bears football. Terry Keschner, News Radio 780 WBBM.
At the film, 8 hours, 20 minutes. Coordinated Universal Time.
The other thing that's interesting, of these three buttons, the third one is the volume, and you can press a value between 1 and 30, and it will adjust the volume. So I will press 11, 1, 1, and press the volume, and it actually lowered the volume. On the top right of the unit is a round dial that tunes between stations. If you press the rightmost button of the three on the top left of the radio, the tuning dial becomes the volume control. Now I can turn it up.
If this is going to be that kind of party, I'm going to stick my mashed potatoes.
Hey. Weekends Rock on 103 GBF.
It is digital, but you can actually tune it like the old analog dial. So you have the best of both worlds. You actually have digital frequency readout. And you can actually, if it is quiet, you can hear the little clicks as you're adjusting the frequency, kind of like some of the first digital tuners did if you had a stereo receiver back in the early 80s. The reception on this radio is the best of any that we found for its price range.
Discover the secret. Hey,
and if you tune too fast, you will actually miss stations. So it takes some getting used to. It is different. So if you push the top left button, it puts you in a memory mode. And then when you tune the dial on the right, it actually moves between the memories. It takes some getting used to because it doesn't click. You turn it just a little bit and it moves. But fortunately, if you turn it really fast, it doesn't jump 10 or 20 presets really quickly. So it's not too hard to remember where you are. But if you're a little overzealous, you might jump presets and get yourself confused. So it takes some getting used to. Well, I bet you want to know how to set the presets. It is very interesting. The row of 10 buttons, you press the number of the memory you wish to set, 1 through 99, or 0 will set a memory called 00. So in other words, we get 100 presets. So you basically type in the number you want. Then you press the middle button twice. You press it once and it shows on the screen, is this really what you want to do? And you press it again. And then you press the button to the left of it, very top left of the radio, and that takes you out of the presets and you're ready to set another station. So let's say I want to put AM 1400 in the presets. I will first push 1400. Then I will push the bottom right to go to AM. Okay, then I will press 2-1, and I will press the middle of the three buttons twice. Once to say yes, I want to store, and again to confirm. Then I will push the top left button to take me out of the presets, and I can continue this process to keep adding more and more radio stations. Let me finish by describing what's on the left and right of the radio. The bottom left is your power plug. It has a transformer that comes with the radio. It also runs on four AA batteries, which is the way I am using it. Above that is what's called an eighth inch or 3.5 millimeter stereo output jack. If you plug your earphones or patch cord connected to your stereo system in there, it will actually disable the built-in speaker. Above that is a button that, for the sensitivity of the reception, in the up position, gets you better AM and shortwave reception. If you're close to a station that's over driving the radio, you can put it in the down position, which may help you in that case. And above that is another jack for an AM or shortwave antenna. The top left, you, it actually has a very weird rope type handle, but for some reason near the radio, it's extremely thin. I have no idea why it was designed that way, but once I had the radio for a couple hours and was sure I wanted to keep it, I cut that thing off with scissors. I found it to be useless. Top left, FM antenna on it, and on the right side of the radio, the very bottom has a control that gives you a light on the radio. Down is the off position, so if you don't see, you might want to make sure that you leave it off. I'm told it actually generates some noise on the AM band when it is on, but obviously also is going to drain the battery in the radio. But if you need it, you can push in the up position if you have partial sight and need it to see the display. Below that is another 3.5 or 1/8 jack. It is a line output, so you can connect it, as I did here, to the Sony while allowing the speaker to continue to play. Just above that is a round knob for adjusting the, I guess you call it a VFO or something, for tuning in the upper or lower sideband in the HF amateur radio bands. Above that is a button that actually alters the sound. It's dual function. If you push it down, you will hear it remove some of the high frequencies. It is also helpful for getting adjacent stations that are really close. Both a local DX kind of button, and it also reduces the high frequency. So obviously, for the most part, you're going to leave it in the up position so you get the maximum treble out of the radio. And then above that is your round tuning dial, which, again, if you press the top right of the three buttons, it becomes a volume control. So that's a quick overview of the Kaito KA1103, basically selling for about $89. Great sound quality, okay speaker, AM and FM reception are top-notch, portable, so when you want to travel, if you can see to program them, it has two alarms. You can program up to 100 memories, although the manual says it has 255. But it's a really good radio, and it should meet your needs. If you want something to listen outside, or want to hear those distant stations, or just are in need of a small radio to take with you from room to room, the Kaito KA1103 is a great choice and a great price. Coming in with shipping under $100 is not going to break the bank, but should meet your radio needs for years to come.
You've been listening to Cerro Talk. Visit us at www.cerrotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@cerrotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.